begin. We have a lot to cover today, but I really want to finish this chapter and discussion today, so we'll try to focus. It's new. It's a revised version of the source page I gave you last week, which includes A, English translations, and B, some additional sources. So I wanted to redistribute it, and we'll use this one if you don't mind. I've left the best for last, I think. And that is a discussion on the nature, you'll pardon the pun. Only good things. All right. What I wanted to focus on today is the context of this miracle of making the sun stand still. The story of Givon is most well known for Yehoshua's declaration that the sun should stand and the moon should stand and wait until he finishes this battle. And it's always a fun story to teach children, and they go, Yehoshua made the sun stand still. So let's go back to Pasuk Yud Bet. Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Bet, verse 12. Hey.
I went to the dollar
store, new ones. As Yidaber Yehoshua La Hashem Biyom Tet Hashem Et Emori Lifnei Bnei Yisrael. Thus then spoke Yehoshua to God on the day that God gave the Emorites into his hands. Vayomer Le'enei Yisrael, declaring before all of Israel, Shemesh b'givon dom, v'hayareach b'emek ayalon. Sun in Givon stands still, moon in the valley of Ayalon. V'yidom ha-shemesh v'yareach amad. The sun stood still, the moon stood still. Ad yikom goy oivav, until the nation destroyed its enemies. Halohik tuval sefer ha-yashar. And this is written in the book of Sefer Yashar, which is some external book related to the wars of Bnei Israel. V'yamod ha-shemesh b'chatzi ha-shemayim v'lo atz levo k'yom tamim. And indeed, the sun stood still in the middle of the day, did not set as a day, as a normal day, k'yom tamim. V'lo haya k'yom ahu l'fanav v'acharav. No, this was an unprecedented event. Lishma Hashem b'kol ish ki Hashem nilcham l'Yisrael. For God, that God should listen to the voice of man, for God fought Israel's battles. And then the story continues with the rest of the battle. And of course, we stand. The challenge that we have in this parak is to try to understand the breadth of this miracle. Yeshua, in the middle of the campaign. And he says, I need the sun, needs more daylight hours, perhaps even the direction of the sun. Needs if the sun sets, he loses the advantage. Shemesh b'givon dom v'yareach b'emek ayalon. Let the sun be silent, let the moon stand still. Let the process of setting of the sun and the moon cease or freeze. V'yidom ha-shemesh v'yamod ha-yareach. And in fact, and indeed, the sun and the moon stood their place, ad yikom goy oifav, until a nation can destroy its enemies. What is the depth of and breadth of this miracle? That's the question. What exactly happened? Who felt it? How global? Cosmological? Universal? Was this miracle? So, our work starts in the Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah, Daf Chaf Hei Amud Aleph. What I'm going to suggest to you is three different approaches, give or take, to understanding this this parak, and then we will have to choose which one of these three approaches we will adopt. And normally you don't have to make such a choice. You just say, here's position A, position B, position C. But the implication of our understanding of this parak will change how we understand the rest of the sefer. So for us, it'll be important to come to some kind of conclusion. Each opinion has its place, but for our understanding of the pshat of the sefer, we're going to have to come to terms with this miracle. The Gemara suggests the following. Everybody have it, the source page? New page? Because it has some the English translations, and it has some additional sources. That's the verse. The sun stayed in the midst of the heavens and hasted not to go down about a whole day. Kiyom tamim. V'chama. How long? Simple question. How long did the sun not move? About. Kiyom tamim. About a day. What does that mean? So how long is the length of this miracle? To which the Gemara offers three possible answers. Amar Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, Esrim ve'arba b'shoy. The sun stood still for 24 hours. Meaning, as follows. Azu shit ve'kamshit. The sun moved for 6 hours, and then stood still for 6 hours. Azu shit ve'kamshit. Then it moved for another 6 hours, and then it stood still for 6 hours. Kula milta kiyom tamim. The entire sequence equal to a full day of 24 hours.
I have a question. Yeah. When, this is our 24 hours? Because
absolutely.
Because usually when...
I do not subscribe to any thesis that changes the structure of time, day, month, or years from Tanakh to today. I do not believe that that is acceptable theologically.
No, I just never saw... usually you see Shaot Zmaniyot.
That's a different issue altogether. Shaot Zmaniyot is a function of halacha in terms of how to divide a day from halachic rituals.
Mm-hmm.
But when the Torah talks about a sha'a or a day, it's 24 hours.
I never saw it. It's the first time I see nothing that...
No question. There's a whole thesis about whether time in the time of Tanakh was the same as our time because to address the years and the longevity of the earlier generations, and I'm not happy with that whole approach.
But this is simple.
A day is always 24 hours. You can argue if relative to winter versus summer that the hours in the daytime in the summer are longer and hours in the winter in the daytime are shorter, but there's always 12 hours in the day and 12 hours at night. I'm not sure that's the issue here. But certainly what he's suggesting in the context here is that if I have 12-hour day, that 12-hour day was transformed into a 24-hour day, namely that in two sequences of 6 hours, the sun rises for 6 hours and then it sets for 6 hours. So after it rose 6 hours into the height of into the middle of the day, it stood there for another 6 hours, creating a 12-hour arch upwards. And then, as it begins to set, it takes another 6 hours for it to set. In this case, it went through its setting arch for 6 hours. But right before it set, at the end of the day, we had another 6 hour wait. Azal shit v'kam shit. It moved for six, it stood for six, it moved for six, it stood for six. So that the entire miraculous component of how long this sun stood for, right, the entire incident, kula milta, of the miracle was kiyom tamim, the equivalent of a full day, namely 12 hours. Opinion number one.
No. People who spend a day in St. Louis in August
say the sun never sets.
Right.
Right, we'll come back to that at the end. For now, we'll come back to that issue. Tanakh tells me the sun stood still. That's what I'm going to work with for now. Rabbi Elazar Omer, 36 hours. So I have a 36-hour miracle. How does that work? Azel sheet v'kam teresa. Rose for 6 hours and then stood for 12 hours. Azel sheet v'kam teresa. Set for 6 and again stood for 12 hours. Amidato kiyom tamim. Meaning, not that the entire sequence is 24 hours long, but rather how long the sun stood still for was kiyom tamim, equal to a full day of 24 hours. And therefore, the entire sequence of that day was 36 hours long. Opinion number two. Opinion number three, arba'im v'shmon. Reb Shmuel ben Nachmeni amar arba'im v'shmon, that the entire day involved 48 hours. How do we get 48 hours? Again, azo sheet v'kam tresar. It moved for 6 hours, and then it stood for 12 hours. Then azo sheet, it moved for another 6, v'kam esrim v'arba, and then stood for 24 hours. As it says, it did not hasten to go down equal to a whole day. Which means that initially it wasn't like a whole day. What all three opinions are basing themselves on a textual nuance. What's the textual nuance? That this verse talks about, seems to talk about two miracles. Ve'amod ha-shemesh. Right? The sun stood in the midst of the sky, halfway, top of the sun, top of the arch, and did not set for a full day. So all three opinions are basing themselves on the fact that this verse seems to divide the miracle into two parts. Part one, Ve'amod HaShemesh, in the middle of the day, the sun stood still. Part two, V'lo'atz Lavo, at the end of the day, it didn't set. It stood there, it hovered. Now the only question is, what is Kiyom Tamim referring to? Opinions 1 and 2 say that Kiyom Tamim is referring to the entire sequence. The entire sequence is either equal to, either Kiyom Tamim means the entire 6 hours, 6 hours, 6 hours, 6 hours, and that the entire sequence is 24 hours. Opinion number 2 is that the amount of time of the miracle, Kiyom Tamim referring to the miraculous component of the day, namely 24 hours of standing still, in which case 6 hours up, 12 hours in the middle of the sky, 6 hours down, 12 more hours. And the third opinion is that Kiyom Tamim refers not to the entire sequence, part 1 and 2, but rather just to V'lo Atz Lavo. So Lo'atz Lavo, it didn't set for 24 hours, it means it hovered here and stood for 24 hours. The assumption being that the first was less than that. And so, assuming that it is equal to half, I end up with Azel Sheet V'kam. What's the third opinion? Azel Sheet V'kam Asrim V'arba. Azel Sheet V'kam Tresa, right. So the entire thing is equal to 48 hours. 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours of miracle, 12 hours of regular. Those are the three opinions in the Gemara as to how long this miracle lasted in order to give Yeshua the opportunity to finish the battle.
Does this have anything to do with the calendar, if it's really an extra day?
No. There is a discussion in the Gemara as to how you can...
For the rest of the world.
Well, that's the issue that we're going to have to address, is which is what is the rest of the world doing during this period of time? That's the question that we're going to take a look at in a moment. But the Gemara addresses a different question, which is, if this is true, if we have an extra day here, either half a day, day and a half, or possibly even
either an extra half a day, an extra full day, or even possibly an extra day and a half, how does that
shtim, as they say, how does that work through the rest of the process? So the Gemara actually records another incident where there is a miraculous holding of the sun in Sefer Melachim, the story of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. And so the Gemara says that what Chizkiyahu did was reset.
There it speeds up. There it is. It's the opposite miracle, and it resets the miracle from Yeshua. So the two cancel each other out.
They wash. Because again, if I have an extra day in the calendar, I have to figure out what to do with the story of Chizkiyahu, and then I can work the two so that they return us to our regular scheduled programming. That's the Gemara. Now the Gemara is essentially taking these verses at face value. Az yidaber Yehoshua la'Hashem b'yom tet Hashem et amorim b'yad l'fnei b'nei Yisrael v'yomer l'nei Yisrael shemesh b'givondam. I take these verses in face value. Yehoshua declares a miracle that the sun should not set. And then the Torah, the Navi testifies that this was an unprecedented miracle, that God should listen to man in this context, l'shma Hashem b'kol ish. What is common to all three opinions in the Gemara is that the basis or the rationale, the motivation for this miracle is what? Common to all three opinions, what's the motivation here for Yehoshua asking the sun to stand still here and here for a period of time?
To help
him finish the battle. To help him destroy the enemy, Yakum, in order to ad yikom goy oivav, till the nation can finish its campaign. And so it's a purely military, strategic agenda on Yeshua's part. He needs the time to finish the campaign. There is a second approach. That's three opinions, approach A. Namely, they have a strategic miracle necessary in order to help Yeshua finish off the enemy, destroy the enemy completely, and therefore the amount of time is open to debate, 6 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, but at the end of the day it's all in the same category. There's a different approach, and that is in source number 2 in the Medrash and Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, which is a different midrashic, one of these is we'll have to do a little bit of an overview of midrashic sources, who's what and when, and which is the other. It's complicated, but essentially Midrash divides into two broad categories, Midrash Halacha and Midrash Agadah, Halachic Midrashim and Homiletic, philosophical, exegetical Midrashim. And within that category, in the latter category, there are literally hundreds of books that are called the Medrash, with a capital M. They are not all sourced at the same time. They are written at different periods of time. Most of them are written during the time of the Mishnah and or Talmud. Some of them are authored later, during the time of the Gaonim. There's a lot of study that's been done over Medrash. I am not an academic when it comes to the history of which Midrashim is when, but nonetheless, it is it's an interesting exercise. Bereishit Rabbah is one of the earlier Midrashim, or some parts of Bereishit Rabbah, I should say, are earlier. Bereishit Rabbah is a collection of 5 different books, and they're not all written at the same time also. But let's, for now, we'll take the homiletic midrashim or the midrashei agadah, we'll take them as one grouping. And Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer is one of those and offers the following explanation of this story. Hamofet ha-shishi, miyom shenivru shemayim va'aretz, ha-shemesh v'hayareach v'kochavim v'cho ha-mazalot hayu olim v'ha'ir al ha-aretz, v'einan me'ar'arin ze im ze. The next significant, he's talking about various significant components of nature and the concept of creation. and that is that from the day that God created the world, the sun and the moon and the stars and all of the constellations have a unique and have a specific sequence that they follow and have never veered from that sequence. Ad Sheba Yoshua V'asa Milchamtan Shel Yisrael, until Yeshua came along to fight Israel's battles. Now, listen to this next line. V'yegia Erev Shabbat. And he was fighting on a Friday. V'ra'a B'tzaratan Shel Yisrael Shelo Yechalalu Ot HaShabbat. And he saw the anguish of Bnei Yisrael that if this battle continues into the nighttime, they're going to have to end up fighting on Shabbos. And of course, nobody wants to have to fight on Shabbos. Ma'asa Yehoshua, Pashat Yado Lo'o HaShemesh Ol'o HaYareach, extended his hands against the sun and the moon, V'izkir Lehem Et Hashem, mentioned God's name to them, V'yamad Kol Achad B'mkomo, Shisha U'Shloshim Sha'ot, and each one stood its place for 36 hours, Ad Matzei Shabbat, till Shabbos was over. As it says, V'yidom HaShemesh V'yareach, V'yamad Ad Yukom Go'eva, etc., etc., etc. In other words, the Medrash gives a completely different context for this miracle. Namely, we're not dealing with a strategic initiative here, but rather a religious one. Yeshua didn't want the army of Israel to have to fight on Shabbos. Especially, well, so what did he do? He bypassed Shabbos. He bypassed Shabbos. Solved the problem by, instead of stopping the war, he stopped the week. He says, okay, you know, Shabbos ahin and Shabbos aher, as the joke goes. So we'll just hold Shabbos obey.
Did they have Shabbos, or they, like, if Shabbat was a day later? They didn't skip Shabbat. It didn't go straight to, let's say, Shabbat.
No. In other words, until the time that would have otherwise been a day later. So they kind of just, they finished the battle. They needed another day and a half to finish the battle. So they held the day at bay for a day and a half, finished the battle, and then had Shabbos. Excuse me? That's what we feel like? That's right. Wouldn't that be nice? You know, Friday afternoon, you're flying into Shabbos in the middle of the afternoon on an early Friday in the winter, and you just, you know what, I don't have time. I need another 2 hours. Shemesh, begivon dum, just hold, wait 2 more hours, and then we'll start Shabbos then. And of course, Yeshua and his army aren't the only people in the world seeing this. And so the Medrash here begins to acknowledge the fact that if you stop the sun, everybody else is going to see that too. This is not a miracle you can do in hiding, in private. So the Medrash concludes, V'ra'u kol malchei ha'aretz. All the kings of the earth saw this. V'tamhu. They were shocked. They were surprised. Shlo haya kamo meyom shenivra olam. Such a thing is unprecedented. As it says, clearly, it was unprecedented. The text tells me it was unprecedented. Nothing like this ever occurred. That's a whole different approach to the story. A much more homiletic approach. Religious issues, they don't want to fight on Shabbos. There was a way around it. Clearly, if the sun had set and they got into Shabbos, they'd have to fight on Shabbos. Pikuach nefesh, docha Shabbos, no question. But here was a way around the issue altogether. You simply postpone Shabbos for a day, and the only way to do that is to prevent the sun from setting. And so that was the last piece in Yeshua's arsenal.
But Yeshua played a much bigger role in this interpretation.
Yeshua.
It's totally different.
It's a different motivation. I'm not sure it changes Yeshua's role. How does it change Yeshua's role?
He plays into it much more in a way. I know, it just seems it's a whole.
Well, he's either determining that they need this miracle for strategic military reasons, or they need it for spiritual ritual reasons. But it's still Yehoshua calling the shots. It's still Az Yedaber Yehoshua.
Yeah, but I agree with that. It's in the first one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu help Yehoshua. It's like, it's obviously is part of the strategic plan. In this one, he decided that Lilachem B'Shabbat, it's worse than doing the miracle, like Yeshua decided, it's totally...
In either case, the text tells me that this was declared by Yeshua. This wasn't God's idea. This was Yeshua's request, in either case, because that's in the text. I can't avoid the fact that it says, as yedaber Yehoshua l'Hashem, and it concludes by saying, lo haya kayom ha'u lefanav ha'charav lishmoa Hashem b'kol ish. Yehoshua is determining the nature of this miracle, so it would seem, in either case. It's possible that the rationale for Yehoshua is a different one in each circumstance, but I'm not sure that Yeshua is more or less involved. It could be. What is true, I think, across the board, is that both of these assume a certain breadth to this miracle that is really remarkable. If we think about it from a logical standpoint, what would be involved in making the sun stand still for 36 hours? Think about it for a second. You'd have to rearrange the entire cosmos.
Well, presumably
we'd have to stop moving.
Oh, he could, but you couldn't do that unnoticed.
It's not a private thing, that's for sure.
Right, you couldn't do that unnoticed,
right? Been right over the battle.
Not if I describe it like this. Not if I make the sun stand still. What we will see is another whole approach to this, which is very different. But clearly in this context, when the Gemara says, Azel shit v'kam shit, the sun rose for 6 hours and then stood in the middle of the sky for 24 hours, or 36 hours, or 12 hours, or whatever, or 6 hours, you can't do that without a whole world noticing. Forget the Malcheha Emori, who are on the other side of the battlefield noticing, the Chinese and the Africans and the Americans and you can't do that without it being broad front page news headlines in every newspaper in the world. Yeshua makes the sun stand still. Anybody ever see the Jerusalem Post's publication called Chronicles?
Oh yeah.
You ever have it? Yeah. Open up to the page on Yeshua makes the sun stand still.
Oh, okay.
Right. Open up the page on this battle. It's very funny. It's very interesting. I always remember that. Yeah. Joshua makes sun stand still in the middle of the battle. It's headline news. The whole world changes. You'd have to rearrange the entire cosmos. Now, that, in addition to being textually problematic, because there's no indication here that there is that there's an impact of this miracle beyond the confines of the battleground, when Kriyat Yamsuf takes place, and we have this Shira afterwards of how great and how significant this miracle was. One of the themes that Moshe talks about in Kriyat Yamsuf, in Shirat Hayam, is the fact that Namogu Kol Yoshvei Knan, that every nation of Knan saw, heard, trembled, feared, ran, the power of Kriyat Yamsuf. If in fact I take this miracle at face value, this is a far greater miracle than Kriyat Yamsuf ever was. The breadth of this miracle is without question unprecedented. It dwarfs all the Makot Mitzrayim in the change of nature needed to make this happen. It dwarfs all the plagues of Egypt. It dwarfs Kriyat Yamsuf. It becomes unquestionably the most significant, miraculous act in all of Tanakh. And yet there's no reference or mention of any response to it by the nations of the world. They couldn't have missed it.
Which means it didn't happen.
Obviously not that.
No, it means that I have a question. What the answer to that question will be will come to. But it means I have a question. It means that I have a difficulty with the idea that this miracle was as significant and as literal and as cosmological and global as we see it at face value. But the question isn't a theological question. It's not, well, how could this happen? How could, God can't make the sun stand still. The sun's not going to stand still for 24 hours. How could that be? I don't have a theological problem with the miracle. I have a textual problem. the Navi doesn't indicate to me anything that would tell me that this miracle so impacted the world that it just transformed all of human history because the sun stood still for 24 hours. You know, Kriyat Yamsuf changed the course of Jewish history. And that was one sea that split and came back to itself. Here, the entire cosmos is affected, and life goes on. And the next group of nations are going to attack very quickly. Right? The armies in the north are already beginning to gather steam to unite so that in chapter 11 they can try to attack Yeshua. Can you imagine what it would take for the nations of Canaan to say, okay, let's do it. Let's go and wipe these people out after they just made the sun stand still for 36 hours? Who in the right mind? We have a whole discussion, conceptually in the Mefarshim, we have a whole discussion as to how Paro could have entered into the sea with all of his soldiers, or had sent his soldiers into the sea. How could the Egyptians have run into the sea after all the plagues of Egypt that they saw? Who from the nations of Canaan in the right mind would dare pick up a sword against Israel if Yeshua can make the sun stand still for 36 hours? So my issue in this story is not a theological one, because I have no problem with the Rebbeinu Shlom saying, sun stand still, sun stand still. My issue is a textual one. The breadth of the miracle, if I take the story at face value, the breadth of this miracle, it doesn't make sense in the context of Sefer Yoshua. Which leads us to the beginning of what I call the second approach, which is some way of mitigating, qualifying, lowering the breadth of this miracle. The first approach, both the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and the Gemara in and the Medrashim in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, essentially take this miracle at face value and they elaborate it, they extend it, they give us a whole context. And the Navi doesn't tell me exactly how long the sun stood still for. The Gemara gives you numbers: 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours. The Navi doesn't necessarily tell me what's going through Yeshua's head. Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer goes on. 36 hours the sun stood still in order to give us a full shot. This is what I call the approach A, which is to elaborate or to expand the miracle. The second approach begins to, I think, reduce the breadth of the miracle. And we're going to have to figure out textually how I can do that if the Navi seems to say that the sun stood still. So the first source that I wanted to show you is Breshit Rabbah. Source number three.
Why does it say Vilna?
Why does it say Vilna after? Because there are various print editions of the Medrash, and they have different paragraph divisions. So in the database from which I pull it, it has the Vilna version, and it has the Margoliot version, and it has... Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tna'in hitna Kadosh Baruch Hu im hayam sheyehen nikra lifnei Yisrael. This Medrash is dealing with broad issues of miracles in Tanakh, not just ours, and says that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he built into the nature of the sea, he built into the nature of the Yamsuf a moment when that Yamsuf would split. As it says, Vayashav Hayam le'etano, the sea returned to its strength. Etano is a pun or a alliteration with the word tna'o, its condition, its predetermined condition. The tna'o sheitnaim. This wasn't the only thing that a God built into the nature of creation when he created the world. He did this with the entire story of creation from the moment of the beginning. Namely, and quotes a verse in Yeshayahu, Ani adi nato shamayim b'chol tzvot tziviti, commanded the world. Skip to the next paragraph. What does it mean? Tziviti et hayam shehinikra lifnei bnei Yisrael. I commanded, when I commanded the world to be created, I commanded that the sea should split for bnei Yisrael. Tziviti et hashemesh v'et hayareach she'amdu lifnei Yehoshua. I commanded the sun and the moon to stand for Yehoshua. Tziviti et ha'orvim she'echalkulu et Eliyahu. I commanded the ravens to supply food to Eliyahu in the cave. Tziviti ataur shelo tazik li Hananya Mishael and Azariah. I commanded the fire not to harm Hananya Mishael and Azariah when Nebuchadnezzar threw them into the fiery furnace. Tziviti ataarayot shelo yazik with Daniel. I commanded the lions not to harm Daniel when he was thrown into the lion's den. Tziviti atadag sheyakid Yona. And I commanded and instructed the fish to expel Yonah when he would be swallowed by it. All of the miracles that we have in Tanakh, from Kriyat Yamsuf, which is the paradigm of Makot of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, through Sefer Yonah, all of these moments when there seems to be an abrogation of the laws of nature, says the Medrash, it's not really an abrogation of the laws of nature. Because God anticipated these events and built into nature a mechanism to accommodate these moments. In other words, what Medrash is saying is that the fact that the sun stood still at the moment of Yeshua's battle wasn't really a change in nature at all. Because the nature of the world was set in place to allow for a moment when Yeshua would make the sun stop its circuit. That's part of the... scientists will have to go figure out how. But that's part of the way God created the world. What's the Medrash saying? And it's actually based on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. Mishnah in Pirkei Avot that talks about 10 miraculous things that God created before he created the world. Or at the moment of creation of the world. Ben HaShemashot, on the sixth day, Mishnah in Pirkei Avot that talks about the mouth of the donkey and Moshe's staff and all of these things that God created at the moment of creation. It's a common theme. What's the message? There's two messages. One is historical and one is theological. Okay, although I don't necessarily know, I think I need Chazal to tell me that. I think that's pretty clear in the text. Chazal taking that, what it says in the text, and taking it one step further. Not only is it God doing it, but it's anticipated. Now, the notion that it's anticipated has two implications. One is historical, related to providence, and the other is theological. With regard to divine providence, it means that God is aware of the history of the world as it unfolds and builds into the world at the moment of creation an anticipation for those moments when we will need his direct intervention. It's not, go back to the question of God, to the question of time, the question of free will. It's not like we get ourselves into trouble and then God says, okay, I'll get you out of trouble. But that there's some broader plan in all of these events. So there's one level of interpretation for this which is based on the issue of providence and history and how the dynamic of history operates, which is less my issue for now. The theological issue here is that even miracles have to have some natural context to them. And this is a thesis the Maharal discusses at length. Every miracle in Tanakh has to have some natural order structure to it. So, for example, when Moshe wants to bring about, the plague of Shechin. Right? When he wants to bring about the plague of Shechin, he takes the dust of the earth and he throws it up into the sky. And you're going to tell me that because he took the dust of the earth and he threw it up into the sky and it turned into boils on the Egyptians? What do I need him to pick up the dust of the earth and throw it into the sky for? Says Amaral, because miracles need some kind of, even if it's not real, even if it's an illusion, but they need to have some kind of structure.
To nature?
Yeah. They have to operate within some parameter of the rules of nature. They can't just be hocus pocus. There has to be something there. The water in the desert. There has to be a rock that you can find the water underneath it for him to get the water. He doesn't just go waving his staff is not a magic wand.
But why couldn't it be if Hashem wanted it that way?
So that's what the Medrash is saying. It's not a question of what Hashem wanted. It's a question of how God created the world. He created the world in such a way that even a nes, which is a moment of, you know, the Maharal talks about the fact that the word nes means flag or banner. It means here is God's, here you feel God's presence. Well, you can feel God's presence in every act of nature if you know how to look. All that the miracle does is it kind of changes the timing a little bit in order to create that moment where, oh, you notice it. But it's not a, God created the world and set it in place not to be abrogated and destroyed at moments in time, but for it to operate in a certain sequence. And for that to happen, there needs to be rules to even the miracles. There needs to be structure to them. And so every miracle in Tanakh is always couched in some sort of context of nature. Eliyahu revives the child who dies. How? Right? Child dies, Eliyahu revives him. How? Remember the story? Lies over him, warms his body, breathes into him. All of the scientists like to say the child wasn't really dead, it was mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Right? I think the child was dead. He breathed into him the spirit of life, which is how Sefer Breshit describes the process of creation of life, by breathing into a person, the breath of life. But the point being is that there has to be some kind of, the term that the Maral likes to use is a malbush, some kind of clothing of nature in which the miracle operates. Kriyat Yamsuf. Kriyat Yamsuf, the Torah tells us that the wind, the east wind, blew all night long and dried out the seabed. I don't need a wind. Why do I need a wind to blow all night long? I need Cecil B. DeMille to show me how it works. You take your staff, you go like this, and the water goes whoosh, like that. Isn't that the way it happened? Our vision of Kriyat Yamsuf is Charlton Heston standing on the mountaintop with the staff in his hand, goes like this, and the water goes like this. You ever drive through Universal Studios? You ever drive through Kriyat Yamsuf? Right? That's how we envision it. The water goes like this. The Torah clearly states that that's not how it happened. God made an east wind blow kol halayla all night long. It took a full 12 hours to dry out the seabed. But that wasn't the miracle. The miracle was that when the Egyptians were inside and the Israelites had reached the other side, the water came back terrifying instantly to drown them all beneath its waters. What do I need an east wind to blow the sea away from? The answer is twofold. I need the east wind because I need some kind of malbush, some kind of natural context in which a miracle can operate. And number two, because it was the only way the Egyptians would dare follow the Israelites into the sea, is that if they thought it was natural. There has to be some element of free choice left, even after a miracle. And therefore, there's always some natural context. Now, if that's true, I have tremendous difficulty with the literal interpretation of this miracle, because there's just no way. Even Makat Choshech has a natural context to it. Namely, we have a concept called an eclipse. We have a 3-day eclipse. I'm not quite sure how, but theoretically, you start an eclipse and you leave it for 3 days. It's possible. Or cloud cover that's really thick for 3 days. It's possible. How do you have the sun in the middle of the day in broad daylight stand there for 36 hours and the cosmos not implode from it? And the people not be dismayed by it and the world not tumult over it?
So it's our interpretation. Our reasoning.
In other words, what I'm suggesting is now, this is my introduction to what I would call the second approach to this story, which is to begin to say, well, wait a second. First of all miracles in Tanakh need some kind of natural context to it. And second of all, the Medrash compares it to a whole list of miracles, Kriyat Yamsuf, the birds, the ravens feeding Eliyahu. How can you compare the sun standing still for 36 hours in the middle of the day to the ravens bringing food to Eliyahu? The level of miracle here is not equal. So what actually happened here that the Medrash is describing, that the Navi is describing, is the sun standing still in the middle of the sun. Right? It's a question of interpretation, but that's what I'm looking for.
That's our mistake.
Meaning?
That we're reading it that really, it couldn't happen. I mean, we read it and we said, oh, it's still in 36.
We're working off interpretations of the text. So we worked with school A, which was to look at it literally, and now we're going to begin to look with school B, which will look at it maybe less literally, depending on how what we end up with. Correct. That's true with any part of Tanakh. I have a text, and I have to work with the text.
Right, so there you just gave three examples of text. You gave us, you showed mm-hmm. 12.
Of that interpretation of the text, right. Correct. The Gemara's interpretation of the text. What I'm going to show you now is two other Mefarshim, the Rambam and the Rabag, who have a different interpretation of the text. But at the end of the day, if we're looking for the pshat of the story, we have to work with the text itself. Correct. Okay? Which brings us to the Rambam. The Rambam had a very interesting issue with this whole story. A different issue than we've raised altogether. But an issue which leads into the same place that we are trying to get to. The Rambam's issue has to do with the comparison of Yehoshua to Moshe. What's the problem? Take a look at the very last psukim of Chumash. Take a look at the very last psukim of Moshe, of Chumash. The end of Vezot HaBracha. Pasuk Yud. Perek Lamed Dalet, Pasuk Yud. V'lo kam Navi od b'Yisrael k'moshe. No Navi ever arose or will arise like, equal to Moshe. This the Rambam talks about this at length in the 13 Principles of Faith, with learning, studying it on the Wednesday night in the class on 13 Principles. The Torah clearly states that Moshe in many ways was unique, and no Navi could ever equal Moshe. In what ways was he unique? Asher yada'o Hashem panim o panim. Because he knew God face to face. There was a kind of communication and relationship that Moshe had with God that was unequal to any future prophet. Second of all, l'chol ha'otot v'hamoftim sheshlacho Hashem lasot be'eretz Mitzrayim, with regards to the miracles and wonders that God sent him to do in the land of Egypt, l'faro l'chol avadav l'chol ha'etzo, for Paro and his land, ולכל היד החזקה ולכל המראה הגדול אשר עשה משה לעיני ישראל, לעיני כל ישראל, and with regards to this great hand and the outstretched arm, the great miracles that God sent Moshe to do in the eyes of all of Israel. Meaning that there are two ways it set Moshe apart from every other Navi. One is the level of his nevuah. And the second was the power of the miracles that Moshe performed. Other Navim can do miracles. But none of them could reach the level of the miracles of Moshe. You understand the problem already? What's the problem?
It can't be such a great miracle.
If I take this at face value, then it dwarfs all of Makot Mitzrayim. And the Torah tells me that Moshe is unique. So how can Yeshua be doing something which is so much greater and significant than even that which Moshe did? That's the philosophical question that the Rambam struggles with. He has a second challenge as well, which is a much more theological challenge, which is how do you make the cosmos stand still in terms of the nature of miracles. But the textual issue, I think, actually is more interesting from my vantage point for our discussion here. So take a look at source number 5. And here I found an English translation, so I put it on the page as well. He asks this question. He says, "Amnam hevdel moftav al klalei mimoftei kol nevi al klal mimoftei nevi al klal." The difference between Moshe's miracles and other miracles. Ki kol niflot asher asum haneviim o naaseh lahem higid behem yichidim ibnei adam kotot Eliyahu ve'Elisha. When other Nevi'im did miracles, they did them privately. There was a few people around. Eliyahu, Elisha, they bring the child back to life. They took the oil, the pitcher of oil that continues to flow, the shashunamit. These are miracles that were done privately, Eliyahu and Elisha with whoever happened to be around. Whereas v'chol ha'otot v'chen otot kol nevi zulat Moshe Rabbeinu, with the exception of Moshe, Moshe's miracles were global, were le'inei kol Yisrael, to the eyes of all of Israel. ולזה הגידה התורה עליו גם כן שלא יקום נביא לעולם שיעשה אותות בפרהסיה לעיני האוהב והשונא הנאות לו. So too does, so the Torah tells us that Moshe was unique, that no other Navi would ever do miracles so publicly in the eyes of our enemies. As it says, ולוקם נביא עוד בישראל כמושה ולכל אותות והמופתים that he did לעיני כל ישראל. So he says it's clear that the miracles that Moshe did were in the eyes of Paro, or public for our enemies, and Leineko Yisrael, in the eyes of Israel, and no other Navi would ever have these two characteristics, to be able to do miracles so publicly for all of Israel and in the presence of our enemies. Says the Rambam in the part where it's now in bold. I skipped a couple of lines because it essentially says the same thing. Don't be confused by the fact that in the story of Yehoshua, it says that he made the sun stand still, and he did so in the eyes of Israel, le'enei Yisrael. This is not so. Ki lo yamar le'enei kol Yisrael, kamo sheba b'Moshe. It doesn't say that he did this miracle in the presence of all of the Israelites. It says that he did this miracle in the presence of Israelites, le'inei Yisrael. Whereas Moshe did his miracles, le'inei kol Yisrael, in the eyes of all of Israel. So what's his answer? There's a difference between Moshe's miracle and Yeshua. It's true, Yeshua is a big miracle. But the difference is that Yeshua is local. Moshe is global, all of Paro, all of Egypt, everybody sees it, all of Israel sees it, everybody knows about Moshe's miracles. Create Yamsuf, Namogu, Koyush, V'Knan, all of the Canaanites hear about Moshe's miracles. Whereas Yoshua's miracles, much smaller scale. They may be significant, but the scale is smaller. How is the scale smaller? Who saw the miracle? Only the people on the battlefield. Nobody else. Nobody else. Nope, ask me a question.
We're
going to get there. I said we're going to get there, but I don't work through the mefarshim on it. But you're right. We're going to get there. That's why I said we're going to end up there. But I want to work it through.
What? I want to
work through the mefarshim.
I mean, we read the text and say, oh, it happened. The sun stood still, and so forth. We're missing something. We're not reading properly.
When I'm trying to,
it couldn't have been. It couldn't have been this. The cosmos affected the world, which it would have had to do. And then you say it's a very limited.
What I'm trying to say to suggest to you is that you can offer that interpretation, but not in a vacuum. It's got to come out of a context of a discussion. A, based on sources, based on Mefarshim, based on Midrashim, based on some context of a tradition of how we look at the text, and B, it also has to fit within the context of the issues. So, yes, you could say, it was a long August day, which we'll talk about. Rambam has a slightly different interpretation, but we'll see that in the Ralbag. But I can't start there. In other words, I have to work through what the textual issues are that could justify leading me to taking a text and interpreting it in a way that seems to be not literal. Normally, we work with a text and we assume what that says is I take at face value. To be able to take a text and interpret it in a manner that is not at face value has to have a justification, and traditionally that justification comes either from Midrashic sources or from Mefarshim or from questions and analysis within the text that leads me to a textual support for such a position. It can't just be I'm uncomfortable with the nature of a miracle, and therefore I'm going to reinterpret it as something which is more natural. You understand the difference? That's why I think your answer that you offered at the beginning is essentially correct, but not as an intuitive response to it, but rather within the context of how the process proceeds historically and textually, we end up with two schools of thought. School A, which I wanted to present, and School B, which is where we're going to end up now. Understand that the...
Question?
No. All right. So what the Rambam is working with is this question of the comparison to Yeshua and Moshe, and his thesis, his first answer begins with the suggestion that obviously the miracle has to be localized to the battlefield. It can't be global, or it would be comparable to Moshe. The problem is that and the Rambam hasn't said anything about the nature of how this miracle came about yet. He's only talked about who saw it. But clearly, if I localize the miracle to only those on the battlefield, le'enei Yisrael and not le'enei ko Yisrael, then I have to do something with the nature, with what happened, because I have to do something with what happened, because
you can't have both.
Right. Can't have both. You can't have the sun.
You can't have a limited market. You can't have a limited group.
And a global miracle.
Right.
Correct.
They come together.
It's either or. Correct. And that's why the Rambam adds the second set of paragraph. Ve'amnam amardi lecha hasha'ot, when I said that Yeshua made the sun hold for a number of hours, mipnei she'yirali bi'omro kiyom tamim, because that's how I understand what kiyom tamim means. Again, we have to go back to the text. The Gemara understood kiyom tamim to mean equal to a full day. The Rambam is going to understand it as, I think, as far as I think you understood it earlier, Shehu Yom HaGadol Sheyeh, equal to the longest day that there is. Ki tamim shalem, tamim means whole. Uke'ilu amar shehayom hahu haya etzlam begivon kegodol shebimei hakayitz. It's as if to say that that day on the battlefield was like the longest, right, the long August day. That's... Right? No, they didn't mention St. Louis. We'll get to St. Louis in the Ralbag. But that's exactly what the Rambam does. So the Rambam bases it on... That get the other end of the spectrum. Right?
And you get long winter. Then you get long winter days.
But St. Louis doesn't. I mean, there are places that have a lot
of sunlight in
the lake. Yeah, no. I think they mean just in terms of the hot, muggy... Yeah, it feels like it goes on forever. That's where we're going to get to in the Ralbag. The feels like we're going to get to in the Rabbag, which is even more radical than the Rambam. What the Rambam says is that Yeshua made something happen on the battlefield. What was it? He extended the number of hours of the day. How do you extend the number of hours of the day? Let's say it was 12 hours. He made it 14 hours or 14 and a half hours. He extended a couple of hours. He made it equal to the longest August day. But in the end, the Rambam still, at this point, seems to suggest that there was some supernatural change in nature that took place by making the sun stand still. Now, how do you do that without it being global? Come back to my first question.
No, but it seems to fit in with your thesis that you've got something to work with.
Right. So how do I localize this miracle and not globalize it? That everybody, they missed it? It was a 14-hour day instead of a 12-hour day in the middle of the winter and they happened to miss it? How do I localize the miracle without... if the Rambam is forced to assume, because of his own question, that we're dealing with a local miracle. Only those on the battlefield saw it. How do you stop the sun and not everybody see it?
What time of the year it was?
We don't know. What would it have helped him if he added 20 minutes to the day? If it was summer and you have a 14-hour day anyway, and he added 10 minutes to the day, what would it have helped Yehoshua?
Give him more time.
I might class goes till 10:30. I don't. Anyway, I'm sorry. What would it have helped Yeshua if he added 10 minutes to the day if it was a summer day? Right. So if it's a summer day and he makes it equal to a summer day, I'm not sure I understand. If it's a winter day and he makes it equal to a summer day, I understand the problem.
That's a difference.
But then again, why is it local and not global?
Oh, in the winter it is. You have then or something in the other part, so you don't.
Anyway, I think there's one word in this Rambam with the Rambam which he doesn't elaborate on, but I think he adds it to transform the nature of this miracle. And that's in the previous paragraph. He says, "Lo yitacha ma sheba ba'amidat or hashemesh." What does amidat or hashemesh mean? Is it amidat hashemesh or amidat or hashemesh?
Something about the light, not the sun.
Right. Right.
The light of the sun stood still.
Right. That's an amazing thing for the Rambam. I mean, it's radical, but it's not too radical that it doesn't work within the text. In other words, Yeshua doesn't make the sun stand still. He makes the light stand still. So the sun sets. But he needed to illuminate the battlefield.
But that's very different.
Very different. But that way, I can localize the miracle. Everybody else, the sun stood. The sun set. For Yeshua on the battlefield, he needed light. He didn't need the sun, he needed light. So Amidat or Shemesh. Finish. Get light. If I can bring Choshech to Mitzrayim, I can bring Or to the battlefield in Givon. And the resulting sense is that it's Vayamod Shemesh. For them, on the battlefield, it was as if the sun stood still. The sun didn't actually set. There was no cosmological change that took place. But I held the light over for a couple of hours.
So then there's no way you can compare Yehoshua and Moshe.
Right. And then the whole comparison falls away. Then I solved the problem.
I could understand where we're going. Now I understand.
And then it also explains.
I could never repeat this to anybody, but now I understand where
it's right, now it's good.
And now it also explains.
Shows on this, but it's still doing shows on how to do.
Sorry.
Believe it.
Yeah, hang on a second. Yeah.
And now it also explains why the other nations attack the following week.
That's
whatever,
right. There's no supernatural context to this miracle beyond the battlefield, says the Rambam. The Rabag goes one step further and mitigates this miracle even more. He asks the same questions that the Rambam asks. He even has a sentence here. Yeah, it's the difference between philosophers and rationalists and different approach. The Rabag goes one step further in source number 6. He asks the same questions that the Rambam asks. He goes one step further, and he says in the right-hand column in the second, in the last paragraph, he says, "Im yirtzei echad al kol panim, sheyu elu hamoftim b'shinui seydet nu'at ha-shemesh, lo akpid ala bazeh. He says, if somebody wants to make the mistake and take these miracles literally and read this as a literal making the sun stand still, I'm not going to argue with them, because halavai that everybody who reads Tanakh mistakenly and incorrectly would do so by making such a mistake. In other words, they want to err by making the miracle sound greater than it is. Why should I argue with them? Why should I waste my breath? They want to make that mistake, let them make the mistake. They're fools, but let them make that mistake. That's the Rabag. The Rabag is very powerful. He says, what's the issue? He goes through all the questions, and then he ends as follows. V'achar shenit yashev ze heina, nashuv leva'er divrei zot ha'parsha. Let me go back and explain the story, and I'll tell you the following. Shmama Yehoshua haya, שטרם שיאסור השמש מיות על גבעון והירח מיות על עמק הילון תשלם נקמת גוי אויביו. His request from God was that before the sun sets, let me finish this campaign. What's the difference between what the Ralbag has interpreted and what we've interpreted?
Oh, the miracle is in the speed of the battlefield.
Correct. The miracle is in the speed of the battle, not in the speed of the sun. It was a miracle. The miracle was a request that I finish this battle before the sun sets. So for them, it was as if they were fighting in super fast motion in order to keep make the battlefield end before the day ends. But that doesn't mean that he changed the day. It says, I'm going to get to that issue in a second. That's why I've been waiting for that for the punchline. The poetry. I've been waiting for that for the punchline. Hold for that for a second. But then he goes on to say that if you look at the last verse of that paragraph that talks about what was miraculous, assuming that what was miraculous was the sun stood still, and for 24 hours or 36 hours, and I were to tell you at the conclusion of this whole story that such an event was unprecedented. What was unprecedented? That the sun stood still. But that's not what the Tanakh says. What the text says is, what was unprecedented? Lo haya. Change the page. Let me go back. Lo haya kayom mahul lefanav v'acharav. Such a day never happened or never will happen. Lishmo Hashem b'kol ish ki Hashem nilcham liYisrael. Such a day was unprecedented that God would heed the request of man, for God was fighting Israel's battles. There's not a reference here in the entire verse to the miracle of the sun. Says the Rabbah, the miracle was on the battlefield, not in the cosmos. So it's a complete reversal of where we started. We've come literally 180 degrees. Now, Suzanne asks a good question, but it says the sun stood still, right? So here, you have to ask yourself, in which part of the story does it tell me that the sun stood still? It's not in the description of the battle. In the description of the battle, it says that God made the hails come. Remember the hail? That's what it says in the description of the battle, that God brought hail upon the people. God confounded them, he brought hail, and more people died from the hail than died by the sword. That's what it says. There's nothing there about the sun standing still, there's nothing there. It describes how the battle ended quickly. How did the battle end quickly? Because the sky opened up and the hail destroyed our enemies. So the battle ended quickly. The sun standing still is verse 12 and 13. Correct? How does verse 12 begin?
Az yidaber.
Now, az yidaber is a very strange grammatical format. Right. It's exactly like az yashir. It's the same grammatical format as shira, poetry. And it appears in a number of places in Tanakh. Az yidaber Yoshua lasha. Then Yoshua spoke to God. This is shira. This is the after-battle song of thanksgiving. And Shira is always poetry. So when Yoshua stands in his Shira conclusion and describes how great this battle was and how they were able to destroy their enemies in a day because the hail came down upon them, he says, Az yidaber Yoshua lifnei b'nei Yisrael v'yomer l'nei Yisrael shemesh b'givondom v'yarech b'emach ha'yalon v'yidom ha'shemesh v'yarech hamad ad yikom goy oivav. He describes how this great day was, the sun stood still for us. Why? Because in one day we destroyed our enemies. It felt like it was the sun stood still for us because we accomplished what it would take an army 3 days to do, we did in one day. It was, Yeshua asked God to still the sun, and he did.
The
Gemara did know that. The Gemara had a different interpretation to it. Listen, just because I have multiple interpretations, it doesn't mean that we can have a bias to one over the other. But we started with a literal reading of the text, and we took it like that, and that's how we interpreted it.
But if Azi the Bear is in a format that's like Azi Yeshua, why...
So the Gemara, that doesn't change the text. This text still says the sun stood still. Rabag is prepared to work with a different set of parameters. Not bothered by the Pshat Drash issue. That's not the issue for us. So I end up with three, let me just, quick conclusion, I end up with three different approaches to the story. I end up with approach number one, which is the Gemara and the Medrash and Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer that says the sun stood still 12 hours, 30, 24 hours, 36 hours, however it was, cosmological transformation of the world, Yeshua is in control. Approach number two, which is the Rambam, it says Yeshua did some miracle on the battlefield, but it wasn't cosmological in the sense of making the sun stand still. It was he needed more light for the battle to conclude, and so he brought the opposite of Makat Choshech to the battlefield. He brought Or Hashem. Approach number three, which is the Rabag, that says that this whole thing is poetry. And what he really did was he asked for the battle to complete, to be completed in one day so that the enemy doesn't have a chance to regroup. Give them into my hands. The hail came down from the heavens and destroyed our enemies. And then Yeshua stood up in Shirin and thanksgiving and said, God, thank you for making the sun stand still, meaning, thank you for giving me the ability to finish a three-day battle in one day. By virtue of the speed of the battle, not the speed of the sun. This last approach is essentially the approach we are going to adopt in our continuation of Sefer Yeshua. Not necessarily because it's the only approach that's logical. The other approaches work. I have no theological problem with the sun standing still. But because in the context of Sefer Yeshua and the progression of the Sefer, it makes the most sense. I will only be able to show you that after the next parak. So what we're going to do is next week we're going to start parak Yud Aleph, and then we will... next week I'm not here.
Oh, good. I'm not here.
Next week, I'm not here. I am at the RCA convention.